This is Ian Pickus for WAMC News. Joining us now is a man many Republicans were hoping would be running an election this fall. Instead, former three-term New York Congressman Chris Gibson of the 19th House District is teaching at Williams College in northern Berkshire County, as his successor, Representative John Faso, tries to hold on to the seat. Gibson, who had explored a statewide run, is also working on the campaign of gubernatorial nominee Mark Molinaro, the Dutchess County executive. And Gibson joins us now. Does a piece of you wish you were running an election this fall?
No, I think I'm right where I should be, which is on the front lines of the debate in America about the future we should pursue. You know, a lot of time I hear from conservatives, they're like, well, you know, colleges and universities really are antagonistic to conservative viewpoints. I mean, look, I don't find that to be the case. I think, number one. Number two is you got to be in. I mean, if conservatives want to have a voice on colleges and universities, then we need to serve in colleges and universities. So I'm excited to be in the classroom at Williams College. And, I bring a real sense of balance to the class. We look at theory and then we apply it. And when we use case studies, we use examples from the left and the right. And we allow the students to have that clash of ideas and let the truth, you know, flow from that. So, I think that's really noble work. I enjoy it immensely. And I think it's really important. So I think I'm in the right place. And as you point out, I'm also helping Mark Molinaro, and I'm proud of him. I'm proud of his candidacy. It is certainly very hard. You know, living in New York, the voter registration is not quite 3-1. It's certainly over 2-1 for Democratic advantage, so it's not easy for a Republican candidate to win. But I think Mark is he's running a strong race. He's doing the best he can, and I don't think it's out of the question. I think he can win, have an upset victory on the 6th of November.
You know, in the Democratic primary, Cynthia Nixon and her supporters really tried to tie Governor Cuomo to a lot of the corruption we've seen in state government in Albany and within his own office. But that didn't seem to hurt him with the primary voters too much. Does that worry you at all about Mark Molinaro's potential to earn some votes from people who are sick of all the headlines they're reading about arrests in state government against Governor Cuomo?
Well, I don't underestimate the challenge. In my opening remarks, I sense the listeners probably got that appreciation. It's not an easy thing to defeat an incumbent in general, and in a state when you're outnumbered over 2-1, it's particularly hard. But you know, I think Mark is focusing on corruption. It's one of several issues that he's really trying to illuminate, and his Public Accountability Act has earned praise from across the ideological spectrum and from editorial boards. And I did work with that, and I was helping in that whole effort to develop it, and I think it addresses many of the concerns that New Yorkers have about their government: open, transparency, open meetings, FOIA requests, all these things, along with term limits and addressing campaign finance. You'll find it in the Public Accountability Act. And look, I do believe there is a connection between the way the governor has led and the rife corruption that we have. He's essentially got a pay-to-play scheme. If you take a look at who his donors are and the amount that they give, these are largely people who have something to gain from government. And you know, too often what happens is we send our hard-earned money to Albany, and he'll turn around and he gives it out to, in many cases, his donors, his campaign donors. So, Mark's going to stop that. He's going to stop that whole approach to economic development and instead focus more broadly on the business environment, trying to make it more conducive to growth for companies that are here now. And that often gets overlooked. We talk about bringing companies in from other states and hopefully jobs back from overseas, back in New York. Absolutely, would love to see that happen, believe that Mark's got policies that are going to help on that score. But then it's often overlooked is the fact that businesses that are struggling now here in the state, we want to help them flourish and hopefully expand. So, you know, you put together both his anti-corruption efforts through the Public Accountability Act and his recently released tax plan, and I think you can see that there's a real sense of empathy with the fact that across the country, you do see the economy moving. But in here in New York State, we are just not keeping up when it comes to the growth that we're seeing across the country, and we're not doomed. I mean, this is not something that well, we're in New York, and we're doomed, we're not going to be able to accelerate like the rest of the country. This is really happening because of choices. And Mark is offering an alternative that you can have more faith in your government and you can have more opportunity here as well. And this is a message, I think, that when the more people get to know Mark Molinaro, the more interested they are in supporting him. So will that get him over the top? Will he win on the 6th of November? We're going to have to wait and see on that. As I mentioned, it's very difficult. But I'm proud of the campaign that he's bringing forward.
Governor Cuomo has labeled him a Trump mini-me, and certainly in New York, the president is not all that popular. So do you think Republicans like Mark Molinaro, the other statewide candidates, and the Republican members of Congress should distance themselves more from the White House as they run this fall?
Well, look, a lot of the pundits, that's where their focus, you know, whether or not somebody's like Trump, not like Trump. Mark is an authentic leader. You know, I've known him since I got home from the Army. I think the first week I got home from the Army in 2010, I had a chance to meet him, and I've worked a lot with him. And he is an independent thinker. He has strong principles, but he also works together with others. And when you look at his record in Dutchess County as the executive there, but even prior to that, serving Dutchess County and Columbia County in the Assembly, you know, here's a guy that understands that, you know, you have to find ways to consolidate, to make government more efficient so that you can lower the tax burden. You need to be transparent. He's done so many town hall meetings. I did many of them with him. And he stands and really answers for the tough questions from his constituents. And, you know, he's also a humble guy who learns from his mistakes. And this is really important to me, and I think it's a true sign of character. You know, a number of years back, he came forward with an energy tax. I don't know where it came from. It seemed to me it came out of left field, but he had studied it very hard and thought it was the right way forward. And when he listened to his constituents, he listened very carefully. He looked at it again, and he said, I was wrong. And he changed course. He took action to fix it. So, you know, when I think of Cuomo, he's just throwing around political slogans. Look, it's a state of 20 million people. He knows he has so much more money than Mark. I mean, if you put him under truth serum, you know, Cuomo would never say that. I mean, he knows it's not true. He knows Mark's an independent thinker and an actor as far as his representation and his leadership, but he's going to say it because he can get away with it. He's gaslighting Mark Molinaro. But I think the more people that get to know Mark, they're going to know that that's not Mark. It's just not Mark. And that you may not like all his policies. I think if you give him a fair shot, you'll like a fair number of them. And I do think on balance that our state, our 20 million folks, will be better off with new, fresh leadership that works on cleaning up the corruption in Albany and bringing more opportunity to the state.
Okay, let's go to the congressional race now. As we sit here on September 26, what do you think the chances are that Congressman John Faso can hold on to the seat you once represented?
Well, I think he still has an advantage. Look, the polling shows it very even. I know Sienna had John with a lead, not much of a lead, and then Monmouth had Delgado with a lead, not much of a lead. You know, the unknown here is really the turnout. You take a look at 2016. There was a poll about a week before the election, and it had Teachout up 3 points, and then a week later, John wins by eight points. And you know, it's not that the polling the week before the election was dishonest. It's just that they didn't understand what the turnout was going to be. In fact, when you look at the numbers, in 2016, there were 32,000 new voters that came to the polls that did not come to the polls in 2012, the previous presidential election. In nearly all of those, well, you know, overwhelmingly, over 80% of those 32,000 voted for Donald J. Trump. This is why the 19th Congressional District, which had voted for Barack Obama twice in 2008 and 2012 by approximately 7 points, this is why in 2016 that number actually flipped to vote for Trump by 7 points. And so in many ways, Trump's election carried John Faso to victory in 2016. Now, when you look at 2018 and you look at the polling and you see that the district is pretty split, whether or not they're favorable or unfavorable towards Donald J. Trump. And so regardless of whether or not the poll has Faso up or Delgado up, it's got Trump somewhere close to 50-50. It's not quite that. I think the latest poll, he was down. Maybe it was up a point. They vary, but they're within the margin of error and whether or not they're favorable or unfavorable towards Trump. So the question is, are the Trump voters going to show up in 2018? If they do, then I think the Trump voters are going to carry John Faso to victory again. And I would say, if I had to make a comment right now, I'd say that, you know, based on the fact that Trump and Bannon have made this such a priority in their communications, Bannon basically saying, vote for rhinos. He's basically saying, look, even if you don't like the guy or gal, if it's so important to President Trump, come out and vote. Is that going to be successful? Well, I don't know. But I think given the fact that they had a very aggressive voter turnout effort in 2016 has to be respected. So, at this point, I think it's a coin toss, but I would say the slight advantage goes to Faso.
Do you think the Super PAC ads that have focused on Antonio Delgado's rap lyrics from an earlier phase of his life are fair game?
I regret them. You may know, Ian, in my book, Rally Point, Five Tasks to Unite the Country and Revitalize the American Dream, this is a real cancer on our democracy. I mean, look, when you talk to voters out there, you know, they don't see a difference between outside spending and candidate spending. Now, for those that do this every day, we know that there's, you know, candidate campaigns and then there's IEs, that basically the outside spending and that there's no collaboration.
But right, look, independent expenditures, just for our listeners.
Yeah, but the average voter, I mean, when they see these negative ads, they believe that the opponent is behind them. And, you know, you can understand why. There's a lack of accountability and in those ads. And I regret them. I would like to see us come to reform. And I think if you're a conservative today, a founding principles conservative, you really got to be for reform because, you know, the system is rigged. It's rigged for moneyed interest. I mean, you consider the fact that in the 2016 cycle, the last major cycle we have data for, you know, over 95% of the political donations in the 2016 cycle, when you count all the donations, came from less than 200 people. So it really calls into question the spirit of one person, one vote. And, you know, I hope that, you know, whether one's a conservative or a progressive, that we can find a way to enact legislation that actually restores faith in our ability to be self-governing, the connection between the constituents and their representatives.
Okay, last one. Do you think Brett Kavanaugh should withdraw his nomination to the Supreme Court?
I think we should have due process. I mean, if he withdraws, then he's not going to have a chance to actually respond to these charges. So I think that the accusers should have their day. I mean, they should come forward. They should be able to give testimony, and that Judge Kavanaugh ought to have the opportunity to respond. Look, this is really a tried and true process for us. And it really is one of the hallmarks of how, among the many, of how the United States of America changed the history of humankind. You know, we have a process where, you know, individuals can make statements, we can have fair hearings, we can have investigations, we can take a look at, and at the end of the day, we have due process. And at the end, and even when there's a verdict, there's an opportunity to appeal verdict. So, you know, this has really been really important to liberty. And there's a tendency to forget that when we get into the heated discussions of partisan positions. And by the way, I've seen it in the time since I've left the Army in 2010. I've seen this go full circle. You know, I watched the majority leader of the Senate, Harry Reid, say, no, we got to get rid of the filibuster. And now I see a situation where, you know, Republicans have taken that and run with it. But the short of it is that's all flipped, right? I mean, now the Senate Democrats are saying, you know, basically they wish that they had the filibuster. But I've seen the same circumstance with Republicans where they've taken positions ostensibly principally on principle, but then they flipped those positions. And so, you know, for the sake of expediency, political expediency. So I think in this case with this matter with Kavanaugh, we should really have due process because there's going to be precedent here. You know, it just as the precedent that was set when the majority leader of the Senate undid the filibuster, there's going to be precedent on this matter. And, you know, it could be just a few years, who knows how long, the next time we have a Democratic administration, and then they bring forward a candidate for a very high office, including maybe the Supreme Court, and then there's going to be charges or allegations against their candidate. And then, you know, there'll be calls for them to withdraw when we haven't even gotten to the bottom of whether or not they're true or not. I don't think it's in our interest. Now, I understand that a real, sincere, and deep partisan right now may want Kavanaugh withdrawn, and I get that. But I just think for the longer-term health of our democracy, there really ought to be an airing of all this, due process that proceeds, because I think that's in the best interest of all of us going forward.
Yeah, it seems to me the name most people will be screaming at the radio right now is Merrick Garland.
Right. You know, and you heard me back then. I was still in the U.S. House, and I believe we should have followed due process. I mean, there should have been that process should have been taken to the final stage. Of course, the final stage is the vote. But before the vote, there were some meetings, I understand, that Garland had on in the Senate, and that was the right thing to do. But there weren't extensive meetings. Then there should have been hearings. And then ultimately, there should have been a vote that should have happened. Look, if the Republicans at the time who controlled the U.S. Senate, if they wanted to, you know, their constitutional duty is to advise and consent. If they chose to reject that nomination, all right, then that there would have been an opportunity for the voters to express themselves, whether or not they embraced that rejection or whether or not they rebuked that rejection. And so I think, you know, that was a precedent that was set. And, you know, the thing for Republicans to understand is if the Democrats take control of the U.S. Senate, I'm not sure that's going to happen. Odds right now don't appear to be the case, but it's not impossible. It could happen. Then if you have a situation in the near term where you have a Democratic administration and a Democratic or vice versa, you know, where if you have Trump and then you have a Democratic U.S. Senate, it's quite possible they don't even take a vote on Trump if he has an opportunity to nominate somebody for the Supreme Court again. And then, of course, you know, we'll have this whole partisan debate again. You know, Trump will say it's not fair, you're denying me. And, of course, the Senate Democrats will say, well, you did this to Barack Obama. And here we go again. I think it's always best at the end of the day to follow the Constitution. That's what my argument was with Garland. I thought we should have followed the Constitution because why? These are the rules that we've had for a long period of time for dispute resolution. And so when we talk about today that there's a lack of faith and what's going on, whether you went to a Trump rally or to a Bernie Sanders rally, two-thirds of this country thought the system was rigged. You know, and Ian, I think you know me, I'm a glasses 5-6 full always. And I wish I could tell the listeners out there it's not rigged. But I do believe it's rigged. And that's why we need reform.